And we're holding in Gittin, page 16, Ois Chof Gimel. The last thing we learned yesterday was about how Titus, before he died, gave orders that his body should be cremated and they should scatter the ashes over all the seven seas because he thinks that way he'll get away without being judged by Hashem. But as we're going to see in the continuation of the story now, he was wrong about that. By the way, interesting to mention, we were talking about yesterday the whole thing with the gnat or the mosquito or whatever the creature was pecking away in his brain. It's interesting, by the way, Roman history, eventually Titus became emperor himself after his father or stepfather, whatever, Aspasianus, died. Roman historians present him as a very, very good emperor and a really nice guy, and he goes out of his way to do good, nice things for people, but based on yesterday's Gemara, we understand that easily enough. We have this creature pecking away at his brain, so he doesn't have it in him anymore to be mean because his brain is being eaten away by this thing. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Unculus Bacchlonicus, the general understanding is that this is the same Unculus who wrote Taugum Unculus, although the Maharat Chayas discusses over here that it may not be, that the Unculus who wrote Taugum Unculus may have lived earlier than this story. In any case, Unculus Bacchlonicus, or in some places it says Bacchlonimos, anyway, Bar Achse de Titus Haba, he was the nephew of Titus. Or another version that it brings on the side here from Yad Yosef is that he was the nephew of Adrianus, which is Hadrian, one of the Roman emperors a few decades later. Both Titus and Adrianus were both anti-Semitic emperors, so I suppose it's easy enough to confuse one with the other. Anyway, Boili Giuri, he decided he wants to become a ger. We have a number of stories here and there in Midrashim and Gemaras about how he went about that. You have the famous story in Avodah Zarah, for example, where his uncle sent several groups of soldiers, several platoons of soldiers to arrest him, and every time he convinces them of the greatness of Yiddishkeit, and they also become gerim, and so on and so forth. Anyway, so he's planning to become a ger. The Medrash also tells, assuming it is the same one, that he asks his uncle, whether it's Titus or Adrianus, I want to go into business. What would you recommend? So his uncle, the emperor, tells him, find something that's undervalued, that sells very cheaply, and go and buy it, and eventually the value of it will go up, and you'll make a nice profit of it. So eventually, when he becomes a ger, and his uncle, the emperor, finds out about it, and summons him to him with the whole story with the soldiers and all that, he says, what do you think you're doing, becoming a yid? And Uncle Os tells him, I followed your advice exactly. Right now, the Jewish people are very undervalued in the world, but I know that one day that stock is going to go up, and therefore I'll make a nice profit over here. Anyway, so he needs to decide whether it's a good idea. Also, Askel Titus Benegidah. The first thing he did was he brought up Titus's spirit using kishuf, using oiv magic. At this point, he's still a goy. The Gemara actually in Sanhedrin discusses there are opinions that even a ben noyach is not allowed to do kishuf. The halacha is not like that, though, or at least even if he's not allowed to, he's not chayiv misa for it, but in the case, he wasn't yet a yid, so he went ahead and did that. Omale, he asks Titus, man choshev bahu alma. In that world, in the Olam HaEmes, where you are now, who is important over there? Omale Yisrael, and Titus answers him, the Jewish people. So Unculus asks Maulid Buki Bahu, would it be a good idea to join together with the Jewish people to become a ger? Omale, so Titus tells him, no, Milayu Nefishin, they have a lot of details, a lot of mitzvahs. Vole Mufsis, the Kiyuminu, you're not going to be able to fulfill all of them. As the famous expression goes, it's hard to be a Jew. Mind you, by the way, it's brought that Moshe Feinstein used to say you shouldn't say that. Many people told that back in the day, told that to their many immigrants to America, told that to their children, and their children decided in that case it's hard to be a Jew. Why bother? But they hear Titus from the next world is saying that. So he tells him instead, on the contrary, zil igri behu b'hai alma, on the contrary, go start up with them in this world, in Olam Hazeh Gashmi, v'hava sudesha, and thereby you'll become a leader. Dichtiv, as we find the pasuk, Ehoyu Tzareh L'Rosh, the enemies of the Jewish people have become the head, Oyveha Sholu, her foes, her adversaries have been at peace. So in other words, Kol HaMeitzel Yisrael, Nasa Rosh, anybody who starts up and provokes and then causes and then harasses the Jewish people becomes a head, becomes a leader. Why is that? There's a lot of reasons given for it. Tosfos elsewhere brings a reason for it. Because this way, it's more for the honor of the Jewish people, that this way it shouldn't be like they were given over under the power of a lowly, unimportant nation. It should be that the ones who are harassing them are indeed a powerful, a major power. And then there's a lot of other reasons. There are a lot of other reasons given as well. Another point is that when you have a leader like that who harasses and causes trouble for the Jewish people, he causes them to do tshuva, and therefore, like, for that, he gets, so to speak, a reward in this world, that he becomes great. Another point is that since Hashem is going to fight against him and defeat him, it would be like so to speak, beneath Hashem's dignity to deal with Sam, a commoner. Therefore, it has to be a very important person. And there's a lot of other reasons that are given for this point of why it is Kol HaMetzel Yisrael Ma'aseh Rosh. So he tells him, you want to be prominent in the world, then go start up with, don't join the Jewish people, on the contrary, start up with them. So Unkelos asks Titus's spirit, Gine Dahu Gavra B'mai, so that person, meaning you, how are you being judged in the next world? Amalei, so Titus answers him, B'mai Deposik Anafshe, the very same verdict that I gave for myself before I died. As we learned yesterday, that he had them cremate and cremate him and scatter his ashes all over. So exactly that. Kol yom makanshi le the kitme, every day min hashamayim, his ashes are gathered together. The daini le, and he's judged and punished min hashamayim. The polu le, and then he's again burnt. O mevadur hashev yami, and the ashes are scattered over the seven seas. So he thought that with that kind of thing, he could escape Hashem's judgment, but no, you can't escape Hashem's judgment, and now he's forced to realize that day by day, and this is what happens to him. Okay. So Unkelos has one opinion now. Ozo askele Bilam benegida. The next one is he went and used Kishuf to bring up Bilam's spirit. Omele, he asks him again, Man choshev b'ahu alma, who is important in the next world? Amalei Yisrael. So again, the answer is the Jewish people. Unkelos asks Maulei Debuki Bahu, would it be a good idea to join them and become a Yid? Amalei, he answers him with the words of the pasuk that in origin the pasuk is talking about Amun Umayyav Lo Sidra Shloima V'Tevasam Kol Yamecha. Don't ever look for their peace or their good throughout your life. So the same way, in other words, he's using this expression that was used about Amon and Moav, and Bilam himself was involved with them to have him try to curse the Jewish people on their behalf, and then to seduce them into Avedus. So he's using the same expression against the Jewish people. Don't ever look for their good. Don't try to do anything good for them. Marsha points out also, it's brought in Midrashim, that Bilam is identical with Lavan. It's brought in Kabbalah Dikasvarim, it's brought that what it is Bilam is a Gilgal of Lavan. So the same way as Lavan was told by Hashem in a dream, don't start up with Yaakov, don't say anything to him, neither good nor bad, the same way over here. The same way over here, Lavan is saying that don't try to do anything good for the Jewish people. Marsha also mentions, by the way, in this connection we talked about yesterday, that Kapitel Ayin Dalet of Tillim is all about the Churban, and there's many psukim in there that hint at events, in particular at the time of the second Churban. Here also we have psukim over there that Zchur Cher Poscha Minin Novel, remember Hashem, how you're being reviled and insulted by the Novel Kol Hayom, all day, Novels Osius Lavan. So therefore, so now Lavan and his guys, as Bilam over here, is also speaking badly against the Jewish people. And the last pasuk over there also, Al tishkach kol tzarecha, don't forget, Hashem, don't forget the voice of your enemies, Sho'in kamecha, the noise that you're, that those who oppose you, Oilas summit, is constantly going up. As we see that Bilam brought many Oilas in an effort to curse the Jewish people. So we see that those last few psukim of the kapitel are talking about this aftermath of what happened after Titus destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So Unkelos asks him, Dine Dahu Gavra B'mai, that person, meaning you, how are you being punished in that world? Amalei, so Bilam answers him, B'shichvat Zera Reisachas, he's being published with boiling Shichvat Zera. Rashi points out, we have that Bilam was the one who gave the advice to Balak to have the Jewish people seduced into being Mizana with the girls from Moav. So therefore, in token of that, therefore, his punishment in the Olam HaEmes is constantly with boiling Shichvat Zera. Marshall points out also we find that the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, it's going to mean a few days in Dafayomi, Bez Hashem, that he had relations with his donkey. So basically he represents the ultimate, the Maharal makes a point over here, the three people that uncle was consulted with represent the three big Averis, Avodah Zarah, Gilah Arayis, and Shlichus Damim. Titus corresponds to Shlichus Damim with all the bloodshed that he did when he was destroying the Beis Mikdash, and we learned about yesterday how he stabbed the Parochas and blood came pouring out. Bilam represents Gilead Arias for these reasons. And then we're going to talk about that he also, the next one he brought up is the spirit of Yoshka, who represents Avodah Zarah, as in the Gemara tells us elsewhere that he was Mesis and Mediach, he convinced Jews to worship Avodah Zarah. So he's consulting Dafka with these three. Which, by the way, Marsha points out, in a way, you know, Bilam is not being as bad as Titus in this. Titus is saying, go start up with the Jews. Bilam is not going quite so far to say start up with them. He's just saying, don't look out for their good. But in other words, so just leave them alone, ignore them altogether, whereas Titus is telling them to actually go and start up with them and harass them. After all, Bilam was a Navi. He had visions of Hashem. So therefore, like, he's in that sense, he's a little better off than Titus. Next, Ozel Asik LePosheya Yisrael B'Negida. The next one is that their Unkelos brought up the spirit of Posheya Yisrael, a Yid who had sinned, and an uncensored Gemara that identifies him as Yeshu. So Yoshka, the founder of their religion. So he brought him up. Omalei, again, he asks him, Man Choshebahu Alma, who is important in that world? Omalei Yisrael, and again he answers the Jewish people. Mahuli Buki Bahu, Unkelos asks, is it a good idea to join them? Omalei, so Yoshka tells him, Tovosim Droish Ra'osim Al Tidresh. Yes, you should look for their good. Don't look to do bad to them. In fact, Kolanegea Behen, anybody who touches and tries to harm the Jewish people, Kilanegea Bababas Eina. It's as if he's touching his own pupil of his eye, meaning you touch your eye, you can damage your eye very badly. The same way a person starts up with the Jewish people, he's going to end up the worst for it. There's actually a Pasuk in Zechariah that uses this expression over here is borrowed from Pasuk in Zechariah, Ki Negea Bachem, Negea Bavavas Enoi, where actually Rashi mentions over there, based on Midrashim, that that's actually a Tikkun Soifrim. That's actually one of these places where the Pasuk uses a more euphemistic expression. Really, it should say, Ki Negea Bavavas Eni, that Hashem would say. It's as if he's touching my eye and then Kaviyachol damaging it. But because it would be disrespectful to talk about Hashem like that, then instead, when the Pasuk was written, it was instead Bavavas Enoi, as if he's touching his own eye and damaging it. So here, it's the same kind of thing. In other words, a person starts up with the Jewish people, as if he's starting up with and so to speak, damaging Hashem's eyes. Marsha points out we have other Gemaras that say the same kind of thing, that when a person starts up with the Jewish people, he's diminishing the light, the light of Elikos that's supposed to be in the world. With that said, by the way, Ben Yehoyada has a vort on here that when this Pesheya Yisrael is saying over here, Tovosim Droish Ra'osim Al Tidresh, he doesn't mean it in the good sense, do good for the Jewish people. On the contrary, he means, unlike Titus and Bilam, who have the idea, start up with the Jewish people, cause them trouble, harass them and all, his idea is, on the contrary, kill them with kindness, as they say in English. Try to present yourself as friendly to them, and then you'll be able to undermine them from within, which of course is what he himself did during his lifetime. So Uncle was asked him, Dini Dahani Gavri Bamai, what is your punishment in that in the world? Now, the Hani Gavri literally means those people. That's because the printed Gemara has the gears of Poshe Yisrael in plural. But since it's not really in plural, it's one person, so therefore really the proper girsa should be by Dahai Gavra, that person. Bamai, how are you being punished in the Olam HaEmes? Amalei, so he answers in betsoya resachas, in boiling soya, boiling human waste. Do amamar, as we learn elsewhere in the Gemara in Eruvin, kol amaligal dibre chachamim, anybody who mocks the words of the chachamim, nidin betsoya resachas, is punished like that with boiling waste. Rashi brings based on the Gemara in Eruvin over there, the Gemara Darshins, a pasuk at the end of Kehelas, the lahag harbi yigias baser, where literally it means the weariness, the effort that a person puts in causes tremendous weariness of the body. The Gemara Darshins over there, lahag, which means speak. speaking, Meloshin La'ag is related to the word La'ag, which means mocking. So La'ag Harbi, when a person mocks the words of the Chachamim, which it talks about in the Psukim before that, Yigias Boser, then his flesh is made to suffer, namely in the Olam Emes, where he gets punished in this kind of thing like he is. The reason behind it, various Mephoshim talk about, the Maharal talks about, for example, the idea, the Seichel of Torah. Seichel is something separate from Gashmius. It's something higher and separated from Gashmius. And Soya is in the other extreme. It's also something separated from the Gashmius of the body and then drops off and goes its own way. So therefore, a person who mocks the Chochmah of the Chachamim, which is separated from Gashmius in the positive way, so he ends up being punished with Tzoya Reisachas, which is also separated from the body, but at the other extreme. So the Rambam also talks about in his introduction to Pirush Mishnayos that it is a similar idea, sort of, that it represents. In other words, the Chachamim are talking about things on deep sichliastical levels, and a person who mocks that and claims that he has no reason to have a part of it, then therefore he kind of goes to the other extreme, and all he's worth is tzoya, basically. So the Gemara points out, Tochazim aben Poshi Yisrael Nevi'a Ovid Kachavin. Now, though, you can see in this little episode over here the difference between a Yid who sinned grievously, like Yoshka over here, versus a Navi among the Goyim. Here, Bilam had Nevuah. He actually had visions of that Hashem spoke to him, and yet he's saying that don't do anything good for the Jewish people. Meanwhile, Yoshka was a vile sinner during his lifetime. He fought as a neshama. He fought as a nefesh elikis, after all, and therefore he's saying, after all said and done, try to look out for the good of the Jewish people. So you see the difference. Yeah, Yid blibed a Yid, after all. There's an interesting point over here that a couple of the Bali Amusir make, that, you know, here they're all three of them that were saying Titus, Bilam, and Yoshka are all in the Olam Emes. You would think that they'd recognize the truth of it there, not only as they're saying to him to begin with, the most important in this world is the Jewish people, but they should all understand that nobody ever comes out ahead from starting up with the Jewish people, and yet Titus and Bilam are telling him to do just that, and according to Ben Yehoyada, so is Yoshka. The vert is, they explain that, in other words, basically the way that a person lived and the way that a person's mentality was during his lifetime, he takes that with him into the Olam Emes as well, whether for good or, in this case, for bad. And therefore, in other words, it's not as though when they're faced with the Emes in that world, then they all of a sudden change and they start realizing and speaking the truth. No, they still look at it in terms of the same corrupted and the same perverted way that they looked at things in this world.
There is no teshuva there.
What?
There is no teshuva there.
They don't do teshuva. Yeah, I'll show you my piskot sugar head. I mean, close your mind, and they
one,
right. So the point is that you like this. You would think maybe they're faced with the truth of all the course. Maybe they'd change their mind. No, we see from this Gemara that not so. They still continue to have their same corrupted way of looking over there as well. Yeah. So, of course, in the end, Unkelos decided, based on all three of them and told them the most important ones in the Olam Emes of the Jewish people, so he decided that it would be a good idea to join them, and he became a ger. And again, according to many opinions, this is the same Unkelos who wrote Targum Unkelos. According to the Maharak's highest, maybe not necessarily. There are, by the way, you have, besides for Unkelos, who wrote Targum Unkelos in Aramaic, there's also a ger mentioned in a number of places in Midrashim named Akilas, who wrote a translation of the Torah into Greek. Besides, you had a few hundred years earlier that you had the Targum HaShivim. By that time already, the Targum HaShivim, the Septuagint, had been badly corrupted with all kinds of additions and so forth. So Akilas went and created a new translation of the Torah into Greek, and the Medrash says that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua praised him very highly for it. So Yesh Omrim, that Akilas and Unkelos are the same person. So in other words, he produced two translations, one in Greek and one in Aramaic. Others say they're two different people. Maratz Chayes says the Unkelos of Or Gemara might be identical with the Akilas of those other Midrashim, and he's the one who eventually produced a new translation into Greek. Okay. Going back now to the beginning of the sugya, so we started the whole sugya with the story of Kamsa bar Kamsa, and that Yerushalayim was destroyed because of that. So the Gemara points out, Tanya, Amar Rav Elazar, Bo Yirei Kama Gdola Koicha Shel Busha. Come see how great is the power of humiliation. That bar Kamsa was humiliated publicly. Sharei Siach Kodesh Baruch Hu is bar Kamsa. We see that on the face of it, you could say bar Kamsa deserved everything he got over there, but nevertheless, you see that Hashem helped him because he was embarrassed, the hechrivus, and that his plot was successful, the hechrivus basiv, the start of his echoloi, that Hashem through him caused that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed and the heichal was burned. Which means, Ion Yaakov says, you know, b'derech hateva, you would have thought, like we had at the beginning of the story, when he brings the korban with the blemish, b'derech hateva, here you have, we said Rabbi Sechaya ben Avkulos had protested, you can't bring it, you can't bring this blemished korban because people are going to think you're allowed to in the future, and we can't kill Bar Kamsa because people are going to think that a person who makes a mumin Kodshim should be killed. B'derech Hateva, the other Chachamim should have said, Rabbi Zechariah, with all due respect, we're the Rabbim and we're overruling you in that. The fact that they didn't, it was Min HaShemayim because of the public humiliation that Bar Kamsa suffered, and therefore he was able to accomplish what he set out to do. So we see from that, in short, you know, even you have a vile Russia like that, and we can see from the story, obviously, what kind of a low life he was. Nevertheless, you have to treat him with a certain basic derech eretz and have avos yisrael for him. The Gemara goes on. We talked about at the beginning, the Gemara had brought the pasuk, where you had people who acted in a stubborn way and didn't care and didn't worry about the consequences of their actions, and therefore that caused disaster. So the first one was the story of Kamsa about Kamsa. Then we said over there, a second one, Rabbi Yechanan had said, was chod of Tur Malka, because of a rooster and a hen, Tur Malka was destroyed. Tur Malka, as we're going to see in this Gemara over here, was a very heavily populated area of Eretz Yisrael. There's a lot of different opinions where exactly it is. Some place it as far south as Hebron, others place it all the way in the north of Eretz Yisrael. It's not so clear where exactly in Eretz Yisrael it's located. But in any case, it was a mountainous area, obviously, since it's called Har. Tur Malka, it's called over here in Aramaic, which the Hebrew equivalent is Har HaMelech. It's mentioned in Mishnayos, and it's mentioned in various other places under that name, Har HaMelech. It's a very fertile and very heavily populated area of Eretz Yisrael. So what happened? The Havon Nehigi, they had a minig over there, Kiavon Makhi Chasna Bakalsa, when they would bring out a chosin and kala to their wedding, mapki kamayot tanagol of a tanagolta. They would bring out in front of them in a procession, they would have a rooster and a hen. Koloima, it was a simon, through of ruka tanagolim, you should be fruitful and multiply like the chickens. Balshav points out that we find in the Torah the bracha of Psuavu was given to the fish and the birds on when Hashem created them on Thursday, and to mankind when Hashem created Adam and Chava on Friday. So therefore, so we want some kind of creature that has a bracha. So therefore, to show a bracha for the chosin and kala people, they want to have a creature that there's a bracha of them on them of, for pruavu. They chose chickens. Marashah points out for the same reason as we use chickens for kaparis on Erev Yom Kippur, because a rooster in Lashon Kodesh is called gever, which is the same word as a man. So therefore, symbolically, it was the bracha on them should transfer to the chosin and kala. Ben Yehoyada points out that they didn't use fish because, practically speaking, how would they use fish for that? You take them out of the water, they die. They want to have something that's alive at the time, so therefore they use chickens. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Yom Echad have a kachol of gunda deremoi. One day, a platoon of Roman soldiers was passing by, shaklinu minayo, and they took the rooster and the hen away. One point is that they wanted to deny this bracha to the Jewish people. They wanted, the Maral points out, they wanted this bracha for themselves. Naflu alayu, the Jews fell on them and attacked them, mahunhu, and they attacked them and hit them. Also, omrulay the case. So now these soldiers go back and tell the emperor, moduach yudoi, the Jews are rebelling against you. Also alayu, so the emperor starts leading the army to go attack and subdue these rebellious Jews. So here is an example also of makshalibi yipol bara. If these people from Tur Malka had realized the consequences of attacking a Roman army unit, then they wouldn't have. Okay, they're taking away our rooster and our hen. It's not reason enough to endanger so many Jewish lives. So this is another example where they were stuck. And they didn't pay attention to the consequences. So the Gemara continues. There was a man there among the Jews, a man from the south of Eretz Yisrael. The Maharal points further in other places. It talks about the south of Eretz Yisrael is associated with the south in general, is associated with Chochmah. You have a Gemara, for example, that says Haroitza Sheyachim Yadrim. A person wants to be wise, he should go to the south and he should turn a little bit towards the south when he's davening Shemoneh Esrei. Just like we find the Menorah, which shed light, was on the south side of the Mishkan and the Beis Mikdash. So here he's a man from the south, which shows that he has wisdom. It also the Maharal points out also the symbolism. He learns that Tur Malka was in the north of Eretz Yisrael, so you have like the combination of the north and the south. You have like the two extremes that come together to create tremendous power. Dava Kofitz Mila, this Bar Deroima was able to jump a mil at a time, a couple of thousand feet, the Kotobahu, and go kill Romans as he's fighting against them. So like supernatural power that he's able to kill them and defeat them. Shakla Keso the Tage, the emperor, took his crown, and he puts it on the ground in a gesture of humility before Hashem. Omar, he says, Rabboni da'alma kulei, master of the entire world. He's a goy, he worships Avodah Zarah, but still, you know, as the Gemara mentions elsewhere, even the goyim in those days, for the most part, realized that Hashem is the supreme power. They just thought that he delegated power to various lesser gods or whatever, but he does recognize that Hashem is the master of the entire world. If it pleases you, don't hand over that man, meaning myself, and my kingdom in the hands of one person. In other words, basically he's saying, I understand, for example, if you're going to have an entire army unit that's going to go, of Jews is going to fight against us and defeat us, fine. You know, kach davka shel olam, that sometimes even a weaker army is able to defeat a stronger one, but that we should be defeated shaloi kaderach hateva like this by one person who's going to be able to jump a mill and kill us, that's too much. So he's pleading with Hashem not to allow that to happen. So the Gemara tells, how did Hashem answer his tefillah? He called that Bar Jeroima's mouth tripped him up. The Omar, he says, the Loshan Apostle, Haloi Ata Elikim's Nachtonu, haven't you abandoned us, Hashem? Veloi Seite Elikim B'Tzeveisenu, and Hashem, you're not going out with our army. In other words, basically he's saying, Hashem, we don't need you to go with our army. Basically he's saying, we can handle this ourselves. We don't need your help. The Medrash, when it quotes this, actually, the Medrash, first of all, has Ben Kuziva, otherwise known as Bar Kochva, saying this, and has him saying, basically, Hashem, we don't help us and don't hinder us. Now, how could he be such a shoyter as to say such a thing? There's a couple of different explanations among Mefoshim along the lines of that basically he's saying, you know, there's more than one way that Hashem can help us. Hashem can help us completely l'mayla mederech hateva, like he was doing until now, but that requires us to maintain a super high standard of tzidkus. So he's saying basically we don't know if we're going to be able to keep up to that. So Hashem, fine, let it be done. But derech hateva, without you openly helping us, and that way we don't have to maintain such a high standard in order to be zoicha to that kind of thing. Anyway, in effect he's saying basically Hashem, we don't need your help, and therefore, sure enough, Hashem withdrew his help. But you want to ask, what's the problem with him saying this expression? David nami omahochi. Didn't David say the exact same thing as the pasuk until him? The answer is David asmui kamasma. David is not saying it as a statement. He's asking, how could it be, Hashem, that you've abandoned us and you're not going with our armies? Marsha points out, with David, this is part of an entire kapitel, where it's kapitel samach, and it's also repeated in kapitel kufches, where he's saying, Miya Vileni Imotso, who was it that brought me to the fortified city, Mina Chani Ad Edom, who is it that led us all the way to Edom? So he's recognizing in that capital that Hashem has been helping us, but he's asking, how could it be that now Hashem, having helped us until now, you seem to have withdrawn your help and we're having a hard time continuing the battle? Whereas this guy, this Bar Deroima, is saying it as one individual positive, so therefore he's saying it more as a statement, especially the way the Medrash phrases it, that he's saying literally, Hashem, don't help us and don't hinder us, so therefore it's a whole different kind of thing. So he's guilty of saying that basically saying, Hashem, we don't need your help. So what happened? All of Beis Akise, he went in, this guy Bar Deroima went into the bathroom. Along came a snake, shantel kaukeshe, and pulled out his kishkis. As he's sitting over there, going to the bathroom, then this creature pulled out his kishkis, and he died. So Ben Yehoyada talks about the symbolism why he died Davka in that way. So he says that since he spoke improperly to Hashem, the Nochash HaKadmoni did the same thing, claiming the Yisim Kelekim, you eat from the Eitz HaDaas, and you're going to be like Hashem, Yodei Tov V'Ra, and he claims Hashem is jealous, and Hashem doesn't want you to have the same powers that he does, so this guy also spoke disrespectfully to Hashem, and therefore he was punished by a snake coming and pulling out his kishkis. The Nochnaf Sheitoi died. Omar, so the emperor says to himself, since a nest happened to me, then fine, I'll leave them alone this time. I'm not going to go attack the Jews. Shavkinu, so he left, so he left them alone, and he left and went back to Rome. Ilzakur, the Jews in Tur Malka jumped up in happiness, and they started eating and drinking and feasting, and lighting lamps, so much that the light was so bright from their celebration that you could see the signet on a ring from a mil away. So a tremendously bright light. So in other words, instead of thanking Hashem for the nest that they were spared, instead they're just eating and drinking and enjoying themselves. And Maharsha points out they're thinking to themselves, kind of they're making the same mistake as Bar Derayma did. It's not that Hashem helped us; it's just the emperor decided to leave us alone because we're strong and we're powerful and we had the ability to beat him. Omar, so now the emperor says, look at that, the Jews are mocking me, saying that I didn't have the power to conquer them, to beat them. Hodor Osalai, so he brought back his army and resumed the attack. So what happened eventually? Omar Avasi, Tlas Mea, Alfi, Shlifi, Saifa, 300,000 soldiers carrying swords, drawn swords, Ilo Latur Malka came into Tur Malka on the second attack. For 3 days and nights in succession, they're killing Jews over there. And the place was so big and so thickly populated. Meanwhile, on the other side of the mountain, people are still celebrating and dancing. And the people on the one side don't know what's going on at the other side because the place was so big and so heavily populated. But this is when we say that the Tur Malka was destroyed. Because of this, it all goes back to this thing with the town of Gol and town of Gota, and then made worse by the fact that when the emperor left them alone the first time, they thought that it's because of our power and not because of Hashem. So the Gemara continues, talking more about what happened with Tur Malka. A pasuk in Eicha says, Bila Hashem v'lo chomal, Hashem swallowed up and he had no mercy, eskon la'os Yaakov, all the beautiful places of Yaakov. So what is that referring to? Ki also Robin, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Elu shishim ribui ayoris, shahoyle li Yanei HaMelech b'har HaMelech. This refers to 600,000 cities that Yanei HaMelech, this is back in the time of the Hashmonaim, had in this area of Har HaMelech. And now, this is a couple hundred years after Yanei HaMelech, but now these cities were destroyed and laid waste by the Roman soldiers. Ad Kedekach, like we said before, they're not even sure nowadays where this Tur Malka was, where the Tur Malka / Har HaMelech was Bechlal. The Omer of Yehuda Omer Rabasi, as in fact Rabbi Yehuda explains in the name of Rabasi, Samach Ribei Ayoris Hoyle Yanei HaMelech B'Har HaMelech. Yanei HaMelech had 600,000 cities in this area of Har HaMelech. V'chol Achas V'Achas Hoyubaki Yotz Mitzrayim. Each one of those cities had a population the size of the number of people who left Mitzrayim, which is 600,000 people. With the exception of three towns over there, Shohei Ben Kiflayim, Kiyotz Mitzrayim, where each of these three places there had a population twice this number of people who left Mitzrayim, which would be then 1.2 million. Now, the Maharal talks about over here that these numbers are not necessarily meant literally. They're meant figuratively and symbolically, and he explains 606 B'chlal represents a certain degree of Shlemos in the sense that you have six directions, up, down, right, left, front, and back, and multiplied by several powers of 10 represents a tremendous Shlemos, which is why you have, that's the number of adult male Jews who left Mitzrayim, and therefore what the Gemara means to say, not that there were necessarily literally that many cities over here, in fact, there are Russian that give a lot smaller figures for the number of cities over there, but it means in terms of the shlemos, in terms of the perfection and the population that the place could in theory have been capable of supporting, would have been that many. Anyway, what are the three places that had twice the size of the population of Yotz Mitzrayim? Elohein, they are as follows. Farbish, Kfar Shechalayim and Kfar Dichraya. That was the name of these places. It's interesting, by the way, that, you know, we're calling them Kfar. They're not a village. They're very large cities if they have a population of 1.2 million. Fine, even if, like, the Maharal says doesn't literally mean 1.2 million, we're still saying they would double the size of the other cities. There's a sefer of Shailos Atrovis called Vinyan Shal Simcha, who discusses this in terms of the halacha of when we write in a get, the city versus village or whatever. He points out, you know, you have in connection with the halachas of Lane Megillah. You have at the beginning of Masechta Megillah, it talks about that what is considered an Iyu Gdoila, a big city, when it has a Sora Batlonin, when it has 10 people who are always available learning in Shul, and they're always available to help make the minyan, and if not, then a place is considered a village, no matter how large the population. So the same way, apparently, the Gemara means to say that these three places, despite the fact they had a huge population, none of them had a Sora Batlonin, and therefore in Halacha they're classified as villages. Anyway, why do they have these names? Kfar Bish. Bish in Aramaic means bad. So the first one is called Kfar Bish. It's a village of the bad. Delo Yavi Basil Ushbiza. They wouldn't give any place for guests. So they would be like the people of Sidoim, discouraging guests from visiting over there. Marsha points out, the point of it is to say, in other words, look, you have such an enormous population of there, Kiflayim, Kiyotzim, Mitzrayim, and still they're all so bad, and nobody wants to be Machnas Urchim. The second one, Kfar Shechalayim, the second place was called Kfar Shechalayim. Shechalayim is a type of vegetable. It's called cress in English. Shehoisa Parnasasim in Shechalayim. They would make parnasa by growing and selling cress. Marsha points out that's also meant to tell us that they were very poor over there, despite they had a huge population over there, but still they couldn't find any better way of making a living than growing and selling these cheap vegetables. Kfar Dichraya, and the third place is called Kfar Dichraya, which literally means the village of the males. Why does it name that? Omer Rav Yechanan, Shahu Nishesehim Yodis Schorim Tchila, their wives would first give birth to a boy, the Yodis Nekevis, and then a girl, Bachroina, a second, Opoiskas, and then that's it. They never had any children after that. Which means, in other words, first of all, Marsha points out, it's not a simin bracha. You want to have more children than just two. In fact, also the Gemara mentions in Baba Basra, Bas Chila, Simin Yochel Abonim, having girls first is a good simin for having boys afterwards, for a couple of reasons that the Gemara mentions over there. One of them being, as those of us who have boys versus girls know, girls are usually more helpful around the house and they help raise their younger siblings. So for that and for a few other reasons, there's also reasons Al Pi Kabbalah and Al Pi Chassidus, why it's so, what Bas and Ben represent respectively in our Avoda. In any case, the point is here they had the boys first and then the girls, so it wasn't a place of bracha. That's how Marsha explains that each of these three things is meant to tell us something bad about the place. On the other hand, Ben Yehoyada finds something good about each one of these things. He says that the place to the Yavi Beisel Ushpiza, it's not, he says, they weren't trying to be like the people of Sdoim, inhospitable to guests. On the contrary, they figured, listen, we have poor people here in town. If we have a lot of guests come from other places, prices are going to go up, and then it's going to be hard for the local Anim. So therefore, we would rather not have too many guests come over here in order that the local Anim don't suffer from inflation. The Shechalayim, he points out, the Gemara elsewhere mentions that Shechalayim, the cress, is one of these vegetables that increases zera, it increases people's fertility, so therefore they made a business of growing and selling Shechalayim in order to have a lot of pruvu. And the Kfar Dichraya is, he says, on the contrary, here the Gemara is saying they had only a boy and then a girl and that's it. And Marsha is saying it's a lack of bracha. Ben Yehoyada says, on the contrary, what it means is, we know Isha Mazras Tchila Yeledes Zachar, when the woman has the greater taiva, when they're having relations, then the result is a boy. So the women would have the greater taiva over there, and only afterwards you'd have Isha Mazriya Tchila. So he learns, apparently, that's not that they would only have the one boy and the one girl, like the simple meaning of the Gemara, but rather they would start out having boys and only later in their marital life would they have girls, because they would start out with the women have a much greater taiva than the men, and only later as the years go by would the women's taiva weaken and then the men's taiva would be stronger. So according to him, each of these things is actually meant in praise of these respective places. Well, the Gemara says, Omar Ola. So now, we're talking about, again, this Hanamelech was had an enormous population, according to the simple meaning of the Gemara. We're talking about millions of people over here, because you're talking 600,000 towns, each of which has 600,000 people, except for three of them that are double. So you're talking millions, of, you're talking tens of millions of people. And fine, even according to the Maharal, but the numbers are meant symbolically. The point is, it was a very heavily populated area. But Omar Ola, Lididi Chozi Le'ahu Asra. Ola says, I personally saw that area, Vatu Lashitin Rivasa Koni Le'machzik. It's so small now that even 600,000 reeds wouldn't fit there. So how could it ever be that there were, not that he's doubting what Rabbi Yochanan said, but how did it come about that such a large place that supported such a large population is now so tiny? So a certain min says to Rav Chanina, Shakuri Meshakritu, you must be lying then. You're saying there were that many cities over there, and here, like Ula is saying, and any of us can go and visit there and we see that the place is tiny. Omalei, Rav Chanina tells him it's not a lie. Eretz Tzvi Ksivba. Eretz Yisrael is described in various psukim as Eretz Tzvi. Literally, Tzvi in that connection means the desirable land, but the Gemara is also dashing Tzvi as meaning a deer. We learned about this at the end of Ksubas a couple of months back as well. Meaning Mats, so Eretz Yisrael is compared to a deer. Mats vize in oda machzikas psorei, a deer, the skin won't fit the flesh. So as long as the skin is on the live deer, it covers the entire animal's body, of course. But then when you skin the animal, then the skin shrinks and now you can't use it to recover the meat, the muscles of the animal. Af Eretz Yisrael, the same way Eretz Yisrael is the same way. There's Man Sheyoshvin Aleha, when the Jewish people live in Eretz Yisrael, Ravcha, then it's larger, physically larger. Or with Man Shein Yoshvin Aleha, when the Jewish people do not live in Eretz Yisrael, Gamda, then it shrinks. So in other words, yes, you're wondering that this place now seems to be so small. Now it's small because there are no Jews living over there. But back when there were Jews living there, when it was thickly populated with Jews, then yes, it actually expanded and it was much larger, and it was much larger than it is now. It goes to show, in other words, that the Eretz Yisrael really belongs exclusively to us Jews and nobody else. You have it in the Teuchacha in Parashas Bechol Kosei. You have the expression, "V'shamamu aleha oyveichem." Your enemies will be desolate in Eretz Yisrael during the time of Golus. And Rashi explains over there, based on Sifra on the pasuk, that it's a bracha that as long as we're absent from Eretz Yisrael, then Eretz Yisrael won't support any other population over there. I've mentioned this connection before. A famous Goyish traveler, for example, who visited there about 170 years ago and commented on how desolate and empty the place is, and he couldn't believe this is the fertile place described in Tanakh. But yeah, because Eretz Yisrael waits for its own children to return, and then it starts giving its bounty again. So, as our Gemara is saying, it actually physically shrinks and expands as well accordingly. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogo'ola, Chaf Hei Odebeis, today was the birthday of the Rebbe Tzimchai Moshka, so we're talking about the Noshim Tzidkonius, by the Go'ola Asida, it says, Ki Meit Seis Chom Eretz Mitzrayim, Arara Niflois, that we're going to see Niflois when in the times of Mashiach, just like when we left Mitzrayim. And that means this Go'ola from our current Golos is going to be in the schus of the Noshim Tzidkonius of the generation. As in fact, the Medrash says just that. Eina Duris Nigolim, the future generations, will be redeemed from Golos. Ela B'schan, Noshim Tzidkonius, Shriyash B'dur, only in the schus of the Noshim Tzidkonius in that generation. Especially as the Arizal explains, that the generation of the Go'ola Asida is a Gilgul of the generation that left Mitzrayim. So just as then, we went out of Mitzrayim in the schus of the Noshim Tzidkonius, so now. So therefore, the women now are the very same Noshim Tzidkonius in whose schus we left Mitzrayim in the first place. Continuing on halachas of Eruv Tchumen, so we were talking about how to measure the Eruv Tchumen. The last thing we mentioned was that when there are houses within 70 amas and 2/3, approximately 100 feet of one another, then that counts as an extension of the city, and then you count the Tchum only beyond that. Now, we mentioned also that there's a concept of a karpik, which means you have an area of 70 amas and 2/3 of an amma beyond the city boundaries, and from there you start measuring the tchum. But that's only for a city, as opposed to an individual house doesn't get a karpik like that. You just start counting the 2,000 amas from the outside wall of the house. So what's considered a city for that purpose? A city doesn't have to be that large in halacha, as long as you have a couple of chatzeres and a couple of houses. A bungalow colony, bepashtus, might well count as a city for purposes of that halacha. So in that case, then you'd measure 70 amas past the last bungalow, and then you'd start counting your 2,000 amas. And then if you have two cities or two colonies or whatever close to one another, then each one gets its 70 amas. And therefore, if you have only 141 and change amas between them, approximately 200 feet, then for that purpose, they count as one big city, and then they have one common tchum, and you start measuring outside of them. So you may have, for example, you may have, let's say, a single bungalow colony where you have like a road running through the middle of it, and nevertheless, for that purpose, it would count as one big city, and you'd start measuring a tchum outside of it. There are various other kulos. When it comes to measuring a tchum, practically speaking, you need an expert to do it. You need, first of all, as Alta Deva points out, you need an expert surveyor, and you also need a person who's expert in the relevant halachas. So you don't just try to figure it out when you're in the country, ask an expert to help you figure it out. I've seen there are these places in New Hampshire, for example. You have these little colonies that the Satmaras have over there, and some little towns over there where they actually have maps posted up in the shul showing where the tchum begins and ends, where they had it surveyed professionally, and they have it noted over there. Not a